storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother Brian Mendez. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield Podcast episode. Ladies and gentlemen, years ago, back in 1967, Dr. King delivered a speech titled Three Evils of Society. This speech was relatively lost to memory. 10 years ago. I found it, and I loved it. Loved it. This prompted me in 2013 to post it online. That video, unbeknownst to me, and I mean this sincerely, I still remember, you know, when I discovered this, that video was linked to in Wikipedia, and I discovered that a number of other sites had also linked to it. But in 2015, I discovered that the video had almost 1 million hits. Over the last couple of years, it's added 1 million more. I've thought about that speech a lot, and I'm so happy that it has touched people the way that it touched me, because the truths in that speech have not been spoken, I think, in condensed form since that speech. People have written books about the problems that he talked about. But rarely has somebody with such eloquence, since he spoke those words, spoken about those topics. A couple of years back, I started realizing that his speech was short. It was extraordinarily short. The three evils that he mentioned were not the only evils that the United States has had to deal with over the last, well, basically since its birth. Militarism, he said poverty, but I like to think of exploitation instead of poverty. And extreme materialism were the three that he listed. We are now confronted with one major evil that has risen to the surface within the United States, and particularly within Western civilization. And I believe he even included Western civilization, that the three were afflicting Western civilization. Ecocide, as they call it now. The destruction of the environment. Obviously. But there's even another evil, which possibly goes with racism, but I think it stands alone. that is this notion of distorted reality. I might even say, you know, Dr. King used to talk about the country having a schizophrenic personality. I think that's actually doing a disservice to people who are schizophrenic. I happen to have had a schizophrenic brother who, yeah, no, he was unstable at times, but this country is different than that. This country has, you know, I think the best word would be a disillusionment. Or maybe even not disillusionment, I guess not, because that would be a negative, but illusionment with itself. That there is this illusionary concept of this country and who its people are and how they got that way. And this illusionary vision asks every citizen to lie about how this country became the country it became. So, we celebrate Texas for its independence, when in fact, no. Texas was created by a bunch of white people moving onto land that they were given as a gift, if I remember the story correctly, by the Mexican government to help them out. And then they rebelled against the Mexican government, which was, you know, a black and brown and red government, so that they can then become, quote, independent, and then join with the U.S. because, you know, the whites, quote, settlers there, the white invaders, wanted the land. And so didn't the United States. And then that caused the Mexican-American War. But yet, the Lone Star State is to be celebrated for their independence. No. No. This country has never dealt with the fact that while it called the people who moved on to Native American land settlers, that it completely dispossessed Native Americans of their right of the land. But even worse, the country has never acknowledged the divisions within its own borders. So, we talk about the Civil War, and we say that it was two-sided, that it was the North who was looking to free slaves. They didn't care about slaves, by the way. And it was the South who was looking to keep slaves. Yeah, they wanted to do that. But the fact of the matter is, no, you had the North who was hyper-industrial and wanted to be hyper-industrial throughout the country. And you had the South who was feudalistic. Yes, they did have some industry. But if you look at the structure of their society, it called back to a European style that was more in vogue during the feudalist era. The major beef between the South and the North, yes, was slavery, but it was also how they were going to organize economic life in the country. The North wanted a more industrial-based nation. The South did not. Obviously, the North won. We don't even talk about the different territorial disputes within the United States, within the citizenry, and how, especially when you look at black communities that were raised by white terrorists, a lot of the time, the wealthy white people just wanted the land. So we don't talk about these things. We don't talk about how the Midwest talking the plain states now, where you have a lot of the farming out there. The biggest, some of your biggest populist movements were out there. And to quell some of those populist movements, the government pretty much bought them off. Taught them how to work the land. Helped them create land grant colleges and showed them how to irrigate properly and things like that. Bought their loyalty. These are now Republicans. Talking about they earn their living. We don't talk about how that created a dependency, which then those people who benefited from that dependency then thumbed their nose at those in the South who needed help but couldn't get it, or thumbed their nose at black people who were fleeing Jim Crow and wanted help and wanted the same opportunities that they had but couldn't get it because they were black. We don't talk about that stuff. And today, even more so than 50 years ago, the problem with not admitting who we are as a people is in times of great strife, those problems don't hide. They rise to the surface and they agitate the populace even more. Over the last 20 years, this country has been rocked by one financial devastation after another. It has been in, this country has gone through so many recessions in the last 20 years that you don't even count them anymore. It just happens. You have had emergency after emergency after emergency. And true to form, the white people in this country are following the same path that Europeans typically follow before they do what's right. They go towards authoritarian solutions before they finally self-correct, sometimes with military intervention from outside, though, and they actually do what is needed. The problem with going down that path, especially in a country like the United States, which has been traditionally very authoritarian. We don't talk about that. But the country has been very authoritarian, and it hasn't been because of the government. It's been because of the corporations. The problem with heading down that path is that every time the U.S. has had an authoritarian regime, particularly industrial regime, they have not only minimized the voices of reason and the voices of compassion and the voices of unity, but oftentimes they've exiled them or killed them. As we are watching, or should I say as I am watching, but I suppose as you are also, what is going on in this country after this election, the illusionment that is often hidden, that we have seen creep further and further and further and further into the light of day over the last, 40 years? It is screaming. It is screaming to be recognized. You have a population that is literally unwilling to see what is in front of its face. You have a population who is unwilling to concede to the realities that are afflicting the country. You have a population which is so dedicated to sidestepping uncomfortable truths that they are willing to believe myths with no evidence in order to hold on to their reality. This is dangerous. This is dangerous. Now, as an impartial person to all this, I realize why this is now becoming more apparent. Europeans in this country, European Americans, white people, are facing several key emergencies right now. Ecocide is the first, which calls into question who they really are when it comes to this planet and why they don't care about the planet as much as other people seem to or really do. But the second, and I think the most important one, is the fact that this country isn't theirs anymore, and they know it. The generation that will take control of this country in less than 20 years, the generation being born today, being groomed today, the majority of those kids are not white. For hundreds of years, they've told themselves that they were the majority on this planet, when the truth was just that everywhere they went, they killed all the people who didn't look like them of different color. They were never the majority. And dealing with that fact is difficult, because then it calls into question all of the illusionary elements that had to be put up like a wall in order to propel Western civilization forward. It literally begs the question, why has God forsaken us? See, because if you are the greatest, if you are the best, if you are the strongest, you would be multiplying to the point of completely taking over this world. But you're not. And you can't. And so now, the question of, okay, are we weak? Do we feel weak? Or why is this happening to us? Has to start entering the mind. And if you are a people who live in total illusionary concept, myths, those type of questions hurt the psyche. They hurt the mind. Because then, if you start to ponder those questions, then you have to start pondering your civilization, your culture, your society, your people, and your generations. And that would then require you to look earnestly and honestly at what your people and your generations did. And now that those illusions start to break and shatter and peel apart, the psyche is not made to take that type of devastation. So it avoids it. It runs from it. It builds up mechanisms to protect you from that. And I tell you, as a society, I believe that's what we're going through. And particularly, that's what white people are going through. Because the fact of the matter is this. In 20 years, European Americans, white people, they're going to be a minority. Well, if in the back of your mind, You have a recording of everything that people like you and who look like you have done to people who do not look like you. And you know in your heart of hearts, if you were that person, if you were part of that outcasted group who had all of this terrible stuff placed upon them, you know if you were in that group, you would seek retaliation so terrible that you might kill a couple tens of thousands just to prove a point. Do you maybe think that if you believe that in your mind, and trust me when I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of these people believe this. I've had conversations with them. A lot of these people believe it. Do you maybe think that you'll act a certain way? Do you maybe think that you'll act a certain way? Of course you would. Why do you think these people are willing to essentially call into existence totalitarian, authoritarian rule? Because they, I believe it was Mitch McConnell who said it. If we let this election stand, then there'll never be another Republican elected again. That's what they believe. Not because the Democrats are going to steal the election. No. Because the Republicans understand that their base is dying. In California, the Republican Party is a third party. If it wasn't for its stronghold in New York State, the Republican Party would most likely be a third party here too. But that's their fear. That illusionary concept that has plagued the United States forever motivates them. Now, I'll be honest with you, ladies and gentlemen. This is not something that I've always noticed. And I mean that. Even though Dr. King talked about schizophrenia, blah, 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 I've not always noticed that. But over the last couple of months, I've noticed a lot of people doing a lot of talking about nostalgia and a lot of adults becoming almost childlike in their reverence of nostalgia, of climbing into cartoons and old shows from the 90s or maybe the 80s. I started taking note of that. And then I just so happened to start listening to Rick. God, I can't even think of his last name right now. I think it's Perlstein, but don't quote me on that. But he wrote the wonderful trilogy about Nixon and Reagan. Actually, I think there's four books in it. But I'm listening to The Invisible Bridge. And I listened to the first chapter, which was over an hour. But it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. Stunningly brilliant, to be honest with you. And the psychological notion of trying to manage, in the first chapter is all about the releasing of the POWs when Vietnam ended, when the Vietnam War ended. But the underlying, the brilliance, man, I just can't say that enough. The underlying structure or even the story of the chapter was really the psychological, not numbing, escapism is probably the word that I'm looking for, that took place within America, and how from the very top top of the society, the President of the United States, who isn't actually at the top, but, you know, politically that's what we think, how this was a strategy by Richard Nixon. This idea of shifting the psychological pressures of Vietnam and what it should mean to have the POWs come home and what it should mean to have the POWs, being sufficiently patriotic and not saying anything negative about the war or anything negative about Nixon. The idea really solidified as I was listening to that chapter. And that's when I started really putting together what was happening now. The illusionary aspect of the society is breaking. It's breaking. And it's coming to the surface. In that chapter, he makes a mention of the fact, and actually, no, I apologize, I think this was, it was in the introduction, of the fact that many liberals despised Reagan, kind of shifted on you because the book is really more about Reagan, but many liberals despised Reagan for a very interesting reason, which I'd never even thought about, which is that they felt in the 60s America was finally growing up. It was finally coming to a point where it had to confront the problems in its society, and it was starting to confront those problems, no matter, you know, how difficult it was. It was finally growing up. Well, Nixon and Reagan stopped that. And you know what's funny is when I heard that part, and I heard him, you know, say that, it made so much sense. As you know, I look at things very differently than most people. And just like, oh, I think his name is Perlstein, just like the author of that book, I see cultural cues which speak to the mass psychology of the society. And that whole notion of America trying to avoid growing up, I saw that in the 80s. Where you had a lot of fantastic stuff that was written, but specifically with music, when you look at a lot of the beats, when you look at a lot of the instrumentals, there is almost a childishness mixed with an attempt to maturate that which is childish. Now, in the beginning of the 1990s, and really, hip-hop started this in the late 80s, you had a movement to try and make the society grow up again. But in the mid-90s, that ended. In the mid-90s, that ended. And the pop music that came out, and I mean, it started, there was a bill that was passed, I think it was in 92, it was 92 or 93, which changed hip-hop forever. It pretty much made the type of music that Public Enemy did, which took all these different sounds and put them together, it made that illegal, and it made it harder for people to use like 4 or 5 or 6 different samples in a song. And so music changed very quickly and became very baseline. And the pop music that came after that legislation was enacted was beyond immature. It was devastatingly immature. And you saw this escalate through the 2000s until we've gotten to where we're at now, where there is nothing coherent about a lot of the music that's being made now when it comes to maturity. Nobody grows up musically. Nobody. And so that notion of Reagan stopping this society from growing up, and Nixon to an extent stopping the society from growing up, is beyond true. The problem with the two of them stopping this nation from growing up is that all of the gains of the 60s, which people literally paid for often with blood, all of that struggle which caused all of this violence against that struggle. Because, you know, look, when every action is going to produce an equal and opposite reaction. Well, that's true, but when you're trying to make a body better, when you're trying to make someone physically better, sometimes the person's going to feel worse before they actually get better. You know, we've all had that happen. We take something, some medication to make us feel better, and we think it's going to make us feel better, but then we feel worse. And, you know, we have to take it for a couple of days before we actually start coming back. Well, all of that great karma that we built up in the 60s, I remember listening to a guy talking about this. And he had said that if we had kept on that trajectory by the mid, even early 80s, we would have been a dramatically different country and a better country. Bobby, Robert Kennedy should have held his time. He was told by the psychic that his year was 1972. He should have been patient. Anyway, all of that built up positive dharma, karma, that we had actually accumulated is now dispersed and gone. So now we have to start almost over. And this is where we come to the contemporary. There's a generation. Well, okay, let me back up a little bit. There's a story that my father once told me, and I won't tell it here because it would take like 30 minutes. But what it said, what the story was, it described how slaves used to keep the faith that there would be something better at the end of everything that they went through. And an older woman, a grandmother, was telling her babies, her grandchildren one day, on how the country would engage itself in a big struggle which would somewhat free black people. But she said that would not be ultimate freedom to black people. Don't listen to those who say that it will. There will come a generation, she said, that will lead black people to more freedom than that first skirmish. That obviously, my father told me, was the civil rights years. Now, this story purportedly took place in Alabama. Yes. Little side note there. And my father, when he told me it, you know, he said, this woman who told this story back in the 1830s or 40s could not have known that the country was headed for civil war. And in fact, died before the civil war even was even thought about kicking off. There's a lesson in that story, though, for today. I recorded a segment, which I got to get out to you guys, on this book by Gary Marks called The 16 Trends. Very well-researched book. Very official book. Meaning, it seems to be a book that policymakers might be interested in. In that book, he talks about a generation. He talks about millennials, and he talks about a generation he calls Generation E. It is the generation that they call Generation Z right now. I hate that. I hate it. I got to post that segment because it'll explain why I hate it, but I hate it with a passion. Generation E. Generation E. He called them Generation E for equilibrium. That the new generation would seek to create a society with equilibrium. Ladies and gentlemen, not only do these people have to worry about dealing with mass psychological illusions, which they've always held tight as truth, but they also have to deal with a generation being born that aims to equalize the society. And not equalize just along the lines of finances. I'm talking about everything. Everything. You see it happening in real time. People are having conversations about stuff that they haven't had conversations about in decades. And this isn't going to stop. It's only going to increase. Because Generation E understands either you have equilibrium or you have ecocide. And they're not trying to have that. So, the problem... So they're going to push ahead. They're going to push ahead with trying to reverse or at least, you know, mitigate the damage done to the environment. The problem with their goal isn't in the goal, isn't, and it's not in the people. No, the ones who are suffering from the mass illusion. With that illusion came the belief that they could do whatever they want to the environment. They could do whatever they want to the environment, and there'd be no consequences. Well, that is two very different viewpoints. As is the notion of Commonwealth versus greed. I got mine, you better get yours. As is the notion of strong welfare community or state, as they call it, and no welfare state. We are at a very important and intense turning point in this country, ladies and gentlemen. We are at a turning point which, despite what we may think, hasn't been decided yet. It wasn't about electing Joe Biden. The turning point will not be decided for about 4 years. and maybe even longer. You know why? Because this society is going to have to go through a shaking up. The stresses that have accumulated over the past 5-6 decades have made a shakeup inevitable. This society's going to have to go through what I'm hoping won't be, but likely will be, a traumatic, with a T-R-A-U-M-A, traumatic realignment, where those representing the baser instincts in the society are going to have to come into alignment with those representing the higher aspects, the higher aspirations in the society. We cannot have two societies anymore. And if we attempt to, and I kind of get the sense that we're going to attempt to, the catastrophic result could be unimaginable. We will become a better society, but the question is, what cost will we have to exact first on ourselves before we do? Because we don't have to go through a period of time where the society hangs on the brink of civil war. We don't have to. We don't have to go through a time where United Nations peacekeepers have to be deployed in the United States to ensure that the society can be rebuilt for the benefit of all people. We don't have to go through that. We don't have to go through a period of time where there's literally people, if not walking directly to Trail of Tears, but in some way or fashion, walking a Trail of Tears, trying to escape warring factions. We don't have to go through any of that. And Lord knows, I don't believe we will go through it. But we all have to remember something. Steve Bannon thought that and believed that there would be a civil war in this country sometime in the middle of this decade. And I'm not sure if he believed it was a good idea, but, you know, he believed it. We see lines being drawn, hard lines being drawn. The question is, will we allow them to stay, or will we seek something better? And don't get this twisted. This isn't just about Trump's supporters, ladies and gentlemen. This is about everybody. Because we all have that illusionary concept in us. Well, I was going to split this up and make this into something, you know. Well, it's an episode now. Questions, comments, concerns, reach out to me. I am your brother, Myron Mandis. I'll see you on the next one. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But
But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and they're